You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles Hunting Podcast brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and on this podcast, you will find tons of relevant information that will help you become more successful in the field. You'll hear product information directly from the manufacturer and success stories from guys and gals just like you. Sit back, relax, and pour a stiff drink. This episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. My name's Dan Johnson, I'm your host, but you already know that, and you already know that this podcast is brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. Enter the discount code 9FINGERS, that's the number 9, followed by the word fingers, and you will receive $20 off your purchase. Now, today, we're going to have another podcast that I recorded at the Iowa Deer Classic this past weekend, and I'm going to be joined on this particular podcast by good friends Justin Czar and Clinton Fawcett of bowhunting.com. I'm sure you guys know what they're all about and what they do. And this is a good old-fashioned BS session, man. I was kind of burnt out that day talking about like hunting strategy and killing deer and whatnot. So I think what we did was we just sat down and talked about the glory days. We even relive some memories about an old buddy, Todd Prignitz, who passed away recently in a four-wheeler accident. We share some memories basically 10 years ago when I first met Todd and when these guys first met Todd, some of the shenanigans that we got ourselves into over that time period. We talk about the glory days a little bit. We talk about Western hunting a little bit. We talk about, a little bit of everything. This is a good old-fashioned BS session, and I hope you guys like it because I think you guys like the BS sessions. That's what the reviews say anyway. So here's a good old-fashioned BS session for you. But before we get into today's podcast, right, the Ripcord Arrow Rests, right, the most badass rest on the market. And they have come out with a couple new rests this year, right? They have the Lock, which is a limb-driven system with the ability to pre-cock the launcher. So basically it stays up. You draw all the way back and it still stays up. And it gives you the added stability of a limb-driven rest. So they have a limb-driven rest. They have string-driven rests. And just more badass rests for your bow. And like I say, every single time, it's a badass company. Owned by badass people, right? It's a veteran-owned company. It is a made in American product. So all this, it's awesome customer service. If you have a problem, you call or you email and they'll solve your problems, right? So all those things on top of being a durable, built to kick the shit out of them product. I have yet to have a rest fail on me, and I've had a couple of these rests on my bow for a long period of time, and I'm very hard on my equipment. So if you want to find out more about Ripcord and all the rests that they make, visit ripcordarrowrest.com. And if you have any questions, call them up and tell them Dan Johnson sent you, old Nine Finger sent you. So ripcordarrowrest.com. Now, enough of the chit-chat. Let's get into today's BS Session podcast with Justin Czar and Clinton Fawcett of bowhunting.com.
Oh.
All right. Iowa Deer Classic.
Yes, sir.
Three dudes, two chairs.
Yeah, great. I get to stand. That's all right. I sit all day. at work, so I kind of like to stand
when
I'm not at work.
It's kind of like my thing. Desk.
Yeah. Well, I'm like one of those guys, when I'm hunting, I sit like the whole time. And I feel like people that are way harder core than me, if that's a phrase, like they stand a lot, and I always sit.
Your goal is to be more hardcore in 2019.
Yeah, definitely. And it shouldn't be really a very difficult goal to achieve.
Right.
Really?
And that brings me to my first question. To Clinton Fawcett here, how hardcore is Justin Czar?
He's getting more hardcore. Can't you tell he's getting tightened up? He's in the gym 3 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, on the group text, we're all kind of trying to get back in shape, so we're all hitting the gym.
We take gym selfies and send them to each other.
And that's the thing. Yeah. Like, I can look at you and I say, hey, man, you're dropping some laps.
I'm in better shape than I was previously.
Right. But I didn't know, like, I didn't know you worked out because I didn't see it on, like, Instagram.
Ooh, I'm not even really on Instagram.
Well, you need to be telling the world that, look at me, I'm in a gym.
Well, I mean, if you want to make it as a celebrity in the hunting industry, it's all about the self-promotion.
Right.
That's true.
You know, I need to really get back into that. People are going to forget about me.
We're way too
introverted
in our workouts, right?
Right.
Is that the word?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good word.
We need to post it more. You know, like my bicycle thing last summer, I hate posting on Instagram. I was riding my bike all the time in the morning, so I was just taking some cool pictures. Whatever. My wife's like, oh, you ought to put them on Instagram. I'm like, that's so stupid. I don't want to put anything on Instagram. And then random people come back, oh, it's so inspirational. You getting up and riding your bike. And where I'm like, I'm riding my bike because I'm getting in shape to go to Wyoming. I mean, I like riding my bike. You know, it's not inspirational to anybody.
Just apparently it is.
Get off your butt and work.
Aspire to be more inspirational.
Yeah, she could be.
To people. Anybody who's listening this, be inspired by me.
That's
some form or fashion.
And I think that's what we're going to talk about today is inspiration. Today I'm at the Iowa Deer Classic with Clinton Fawcett and Justin Czar of bowhunting.com. How long have we known each other? Like, it's been a long time, right?
Yeah, I was thinking at least 10, 12 years, something like that. I was going back through some old pictures the other night and, like, looking at old pictures of all of us, but, like, of you, like, pre-beard Dan, like, I was like, whoa, good God, look at Dan.
We were definitely more fatter baby-faced.
Yeah.
I don't remember Dan being so much fatter baby-faced. He was just, like, wrestling badass Dan.
Yeah, he was, like, Iowa farm kid that would beat your ass, like, all the time.
I'm telling you. The only reason I grew a beard is because I started getting a double chin.
It hides it really well, doesn't it?
It hides it really well. So, you know, as long as my t-shirts are tight in the right spots, if my shoulders stick out past my love handles and my chest sticks out past my gut, I can get away with at least looking like I'm in shape.
Sure.
Or looking like, you know, but
it's easy to hide the weight that way.
Yeah.
But again, if you want to make it in this industry, that's not going to cut it, dude.
Right.
You gotta trim down. You gotta start ordering your shirts a size smaller. You gotta get yourself some fancy cowboy boots like Boss has got here.
Those are badass. Fancy.
They're five.
And some bedazzled jeans.
Yeah, right. They're getting pretty old.
Right.
Time for new ones.
So there was a lot of guys with bedazzled jeans
I want to talk to you about that because I feel that in the quote unquote hunting industry, there's been a change. We started to see less bedazzled jeans and more. Let's say, like, khaki pants with hiking boots and, like, flat bill hats.
I'm a cool Western hunter motif
that's going on out there
right now.
I think that's absorbed over into the world of whitetails.
Yeah, I would agree.
To a certain degree. But the funny thing is, like, there's all these jokes about the bedazzled jeans thing, right? But it's like you go to the ATA or even to the bar last night where we were at, and there's still a lot of dudes wearing them. And it's like, apparently you guys didn't get the memo or you don't listen to these podcasts where we make fun of people like you because they're still doing it.
I can't wait for some guy to hear that, walk by where we're at right now and just be like, God dang it. I got to go to the mall and change my pants. I remember back when I was in high school, it was cool to have the chew ring in the back pocket. Right? And
that's not still cool in certain places?
Even if you didn't chew, you would still have an empty can in your back pocket. So, you know, you would get that fade in the back of your jeans.
Yeah. You should have started making them that way. You'd been rich.
Oh, and I'm sure they did.
There you go.
All right.
Hey, when you guys were out last night, did you guys see any of like Affliction T-shirts?
Or no, we were at like a country and western bar.
Okay. What was the name of it? Miss Kitty's?
No. It's called Beer Can Alley. Is that where we went?
Beer Can Alley.
Was it?
There were some girls walking around the show here yesterday giving out free drink things to get people to go there. So we were like, great. We have like 3 or 5 free beer tickets.
It was called Clinton's Going to Have a Headache on Dan's podcast. it was like old school, like 10 years ago when we met Dan type situation.
Yeah.
So you're married with kids.
Yes.
You're married and you have kids.
Yes.
He's got a lot of kids.
Like, how many kids do you have?
5.
You have 5 kids?
Yep.
Holy shit.
5 kids.
I bitch about my 3.
And yeah, right. And like, I got 3.
Yeah, you got 3.
Yeah, he's got us beat, man. Like, so, like, anytime you're feeling, like, stressed out, you just think about old Clint over here and his gaggle of children.
But he's so cool. He comes off so cool. Like, your kids probably don't bother you. Like, my kids bother me.
No, they bother me. I get it. I get anxiety over it. Like, if there's too much going on at once, I get, like, overstimulated. Like, like my wife tells me I'm autistic. I just never was put on the spectrum when I was a kid because it wasn't cool then, right? So you just didn't know about it.
I'm not so sure it's cool now.
It is what it is, right?
Sure.
It's accepted now, right?
Sure. It's more readily diagnosed,
There's knowledge about it out there.
Sure.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Back when I was a kid, I feel like I say that a lot now as I get older. I'm 38.
I'll be 37 on Monday.
And you're 38, right?
Yeah.
So it's like I'm to the age now where I can start saying that because I'm just about 20 years out of high school. This year will be my 20th high school reunion. And I can, when I was your age.
Yeah.
The cell phone had just been invented and I didn't have one. And, like, I can remember going, I don't need a cell phone. That shit's uncool. Now it's like.
You're glued to it?
Yeah.
That was kind of my point about, like, when you mentioned Instagram. I, like, you know, I went through, like, a social media detox at the end of last year and the beginning of this year because I was just on it too much.
Yeah.
Like, it was affecting, like, not just, like, when I was at home. You know, I got little kids, and they're only going to be little for so long.
Yeah.
And here they are running around. They want to play Candyland with me or whatever, and I'm on Instagram looking at something that literally has no meaning to me at all. So
you're conditioned.
And it would start, like, even at work, like, I'd be on the phone with somebody, and it was, like, in between doing two things, the first thing I would do is, like, check social media. Yeah. So I literally, like, at the beginning of December, I was like, I'm done. Yeah. I logged out of everything.
Yeah.
And this morning, actually, oddly enough, was the first time I logged back into my Instagram account in the last, like, 3 months. And I had all these messages from people. Now I feel like a D-bag. Because I had a bunch of people that were messaging me, like, during the hunting season. And they're like, hey, dude, late season's coming. What kind of gear are you going to be using? Do you change anything up? And, of course, I never responded because I wasn't logged into my account.
Right.
And now they're probably like, that guy is such a huge celebrity D-bag. He doesn't respond to my DMs.
So
I went and set the limit on my phone at 45 minutes a day for social
media.
Oh, you did? Yeah, to try it. And I do pretty good with it, but sometimes, like, the group text message and stuff, it eats up my 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Keeps it off. But, you know, the kids get old so fast, right? Your kids grow up crazy fast. Avery's 11. Yeah. He'll be 12 in the summer, you know. Emerson's 9. Red's 7, you know. My other little girl passed away, the fourth one. Her name was Sawyer. She'd be 3.5. And then our new one, Whitley, is 6 months. So it just goes goes like that, you know. So it's good to stay off your phone because kids just, they're just going to be gone, right? Then they're going to be us before you know it. And, you know.
God, I hope not.
You're just gone. Well,
that's what I was talking with my a guy the other day, and I was like, my wife still, she's heard the stories, but she doesn't know the old Dan Johnson. She doesn't know college Dan Johnson. And I tell that to her every once in a while. I go, oh, man, I feel like drinking like college Dan Johnson tonight, which is never a good idea anymore because, you know, there's only like, if I ever went back to college Dan Johnson, it would be like hospital type visits, especially my 38-year-old body. But I tell her, she's like, you couldn't have been this bad. And then we get to telling stories at some of my high school buddies, and she's like, wait a second, you did those things? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you were an asshole. Like, there's way I would have married you if I knew you would have done, if you did those things.
My wife met me kind of at my peak of that phase of my life. We met, I think it was 21 or 22, and we didn't start dating for probably 5 years after we initially met. But she met me, like, at my height of, you know, young and assholishness and just drinking and just, like, so she got to see it all. Obviously, it's changed now. I tried to be college Justin like 2 summers ago at Deerfest.
Yeah,
we were hanging out with a bunch of guys from Indiana and actually Bud from Catching Deers and some of our crew, and got a little too out of control, and it didn't end well for me that night.
My wife has always been dragging along on the Clinton train because we started dating when we were 14.
Oof.
So she's seen the whole
evolution.
You know, the evolution of, we were in high school, and then we broke up, and she was gone, and she'd come back, and then I'd be gone, and I'd come back, and then just running and partying. And then I hung on to that a little bit too long, you know. You know how it is.
Oh, dude.
Had
and
her
now,
first
and
kid
now
at 20.
Now it's just, we've replaced that with basically hunting.
Right.
Essentially, to fill that void in our lives.
We got to do something that's somewhat intense. Not like saying, like, whitetail hunting really isn't crazy intense, but...
But in the young days, you were out hunting chicks.
Yeah.
That's
like when you were young and single, and that was the thrill of the chase. We can't do that anymore. No. Now we have to hunt deer.
Yeah,
And we kill them in the end, unfortunately for the deer.
Right. Man, I love how this podcast instantly just transitioned. It went like... It started off crazy, and then we start talking about kids, and we give it advice about, oh, yeah, you know, like, this is my family. I, you know, got to put down the cell phone. And really, and then it comes right back to drinking and partying.
Drinking and then hunting, yes.
Well, I mean, it takes me, like, a whole 3 minutes to revert back to bachelorism when I'm not around my wife.
Yeah.
I mean, it's – and then I feel bad the next day.
Well, we walked into the bar last night, and I was like, I'm not sure why we're here, because there's nothing good that can come out of our presence in this building. So, like, zero. There's nothing that's going to happen tonight that we're going to look back on and be like, that was a great idea. But let's go do it anyways.
I can remember one of the bowhunting.com team gatherings. Oof. This was years ago. Like, I just remember it was at the hunt club. And
it wasn't even bowhunting.com.
No.
It was Hunting Net
Hunting
still.
Hunting Net still. Okay.
It was the first year of White Knuckle.
Yeah.
That was
you guys
before
came.
Me.
That was
I
before Clinton.
I just heard the story.
Yeah. So, yeah, you were there. Todd. Tyler Tissue was there.
Yep.
I think Wally and Tater were there. Kyle was there.
Yep.
The whole kind of crew. And we had maybe like 30 guys from Hunting Net that all got. I think it was probably one of the first times I met you.
Yeah.
I want to say.
Yeah. I remember the, number one, the mosquitoes were so bad while we were shooting our bows. Holy cow. You couldn't even focus. They were so bad. But, you know, we made it through that. And then I just remember me and Todd and Tyler Tissue, I mean, after way too many beers, sitting out there and shooting targets in the pitch black dark. I came there with 12 arrows. I left with 0 arrows.
That was kind of a common white knuckle theme through the years, which was the late night, like in the dark target shooting. But yes, I remember, so that event, you guys ended up like crashing in the clubhouse that night. And I remember there was like a UFC fight, and we ended up getting the UFC fight on like the satellite. And when the bill came, Todd Graff was like, what the hell is this? Who ordered the UFC fight at the Hunt Club? But I remember, Dan, I remember you coming back from somewhere with a garbage bag or a garbage can and a keg and a bunch of ice and carrying it into the Hunt Club. We literally had a keg of beer.
Wow.
That night, and we watched the UFC fight. And
I don't think Dan remembered that.
I don't.
No, I remember, because I remember, like, you guys coming, because you went up into town to get beer and come back, and, you know, I'm thinking they're going to go grab a case or two of beer, and you guys came in with a keg of beer.
I do. Holy cow, I do remember that. I don't even, I just remember they're like, do you have 10 cases of beer? No. Okay. We'll take a keg.
Yeah.
And I, you know, obviously you spend like $150 on a keg of beer that probably didn't even come close to getting drank. And, the old, good old days.
Yeah, it was funny because Todd Prignitz had brought a bunch of white knuckle hats and shirts and stuff. And he was trying to sell them like earlier in the day. And then he got wasted. And at like midnight, he was literally handing shirts and hats to everybody at the place. Literally,
you get a hat.
Everybody in the place. It's funny. I was looking back, and I found some pictures from that event the other night, and there's a picture of Tyler Tissue, and he's like a quarter of the way drawing a bow back and getting ready to, like, smack Todd Pringnitz with it when he lets it go, like, in the ass. Because Todd's, like, bent over doing something. But the thing I remember about the picture is Todd Pringnitz is bent over this desk doing something, and he's got, you know, like, Carhartts or something, and they had the white knuckle logo embroidered
yes.
on the back of the pants, yes. like, on the ass of the jeans.
Yes.
And I was like, what the hell? Who does that?
Yeah.
Todd.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, Todd.
It's kind of funny. I just got done right before I came here. I just got done recording a podcast with Jason Sciens, and we kind of just talked about memories of Todd back in the early days, and because I was with him like in 2006, like,
yeah,
almost right when it started, and I can remember, you know, we all know Todd was one of a kind, right? This crazy guy, and I can remember, like, him calling me up one day and being like, dude, let's go shed hunt. And I'm like, what's shed hunting? Like, that was before I even knew what shed hunting was. But I had a piece of property that we could go on. And here's Todd, like, you know, he's hardcore already at this point, and I had just started getting my feet wet into how hardcore everything was. And I remember walking into the timber, not having ever found a shed before, and I walk up on this giant shed, first shed I ever found, and he got so pissed off because he had been hunting like shed hunting for 4 days, not finding any sheds, and then he's like, "Are you serious?" I'm like, "Yeah, dude." So then like I got the glory that day, right? I got my picture taken, and I got, you know, put on the video camera, and he's like, "Dallas, you son of a bitch."
That was the good old, the Dallas days, right? Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot of people listening like, who the hell is Dallas,
yeah, right?
Dallas-Fort Worth.
So right. I'll tell this story
before
again.
Before Dan Johnson, there was Dallas-Fort Worth.
I'll tell you the story again. I was living in Alabama in 2005. That's the year of the finger, 2005. And got my finger chopped off, started getting sick of the job that I was at, decided I was going to move home. My buddy Brent Rich calls me up and says, "Hey man, you gotta check, come back to Iowa, and if you do, I gotta introduce you to a guy." Because me and my other buddy Brent, we had hunted before, but weren't really serious into it like back in the day. Like, I had taken this hiatus away from hunting, and then so we come to, I moved back to Iowa, and my buddy Brent calls me up. He's like, "Hey man, we're at the bar, Keo's, Mount Pleasant. Why don't you come down? You can meet Todd." And I'm like, "All right, I'll meet him." Walk in. There's no music playing in the bar, right? I sit down. He's like, puts his hand out, shakes my hand. "Yeah, I'm Todd Pringnitz." I said, "Oh, okay, nice to meet you. My name's Dan." He goes, "Dallas?" Yo, like, I look around, like, there's no music playing. It's not loud in here. How did you confuse Dan and Dallas? I said, "No. Dan Johnson." And he goes, Dallas-Fort Worth? And I'm just like, what? And I just was like, "Yeah, okay, bud, like, whatever." Like,
sure,
so,
dude.
So the very first time I ever met the dude is when he gave me the nickname Dallas-Fort Worth. And this was probably after about 8 Bell's Two Hearted Ales, which you would drink, like, just like 14% alcohol.
I think when I first met you, I don't even know that I knew your name for probably a couple of years. I just knew you as Dallas. Like, that was,
well,
that was
it's
it.
Funny today, there's still a lot of people out there. Or one, if anybody calls me Dallas, the other people are like, "No, this is Dan. This is Dan Johnson." Or anybody that's involved with the Sportsman's Nation doesn't know the Dallas-Fort Worth. So they're like, so then there's this aha moment where you get the education of, okay, Dan Johnson is Dallas-Fort Worth, and Dallas-Fort Worth is Dan Johnson. And so it's
I can still remember pulling up to Todd's house, Frank and I, the first time we come over there for a meeting or whatever. Right. And we were on the north side of the house, and everybody was like overlooking the bottom, like out the porch, and you were around there, and Dewey pulled up, and it was just total utter chaos. Right. And we're just like, we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, but I promise you, we did not think that was not any idea what it was going to be, you know. And we pull up, and you were like, "Hey, I'm Dallas." And Frank and I turned around, dude, everybody was drinking, having a good time, and you know, we shot bows at night that night, and
flaming arrows,
yeah. And
another time where I had to go buy new arrows after an event.
Wait, Phipps
dry
really
fired the Hoyt 50
sponsor.
Times, you know.
Right, right,
great.
Yeah.
Good times.
Just nuts, man. I look back into those days and I say, I'm glad I can remember them and I'm glad I went through them, but I'm glad that we still don't do that dumb shit.
Young and dumb, right?
That's right.
It's the story of life. But it's you know, we talked to Jason yesterday too, and I've mentioned this before, like, those are the moments in your life that you just don't realize when they're happening, like kind of how special they are.
Right.
And then you look back on them and you're like, yeah, you know, we were crazy and we were doing dumb stuff, but like, man, those are some of the best times.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, ever. And when you're living it at the time, you just think it's gonna go forever. This is just the normal.
Yeah.
You know, but things change, and eventually you look back and go, man, that was fun.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Right.
For sure.
And then you educate your kids on how to not do that.
Yeah, but
stuff.
They're gonna do it anyways,
right, right.
Regardless, because our parents all definitely told us not to do any of those things, and we did them anyway.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I always had my dad pegged at this nerd, like. You know, this guy who's just like, you know, really straight-laced, never did shit. And then as I start listening more, I hear him talking to his buddies, or I hear a story about how one time my dad like rolled a car in the ditch and my grandpa had to go pull him out with a tractor and all this crazy. Like, I'm like, okay, maybe there is a place where I come from.
It's like, there's reason for all of this.
Absolutely, absolutely. So 2019, I mean, like, I just, last year I shot my biggest buck ever, and like, from an inches standpoint, 5-year-old, 154 inch 9-pointer, I don't care. Like, I thought like maybe, oh my God, dude, this is awesome. I shot this giant buck, my biggest scoring buck ever. I felt like maybe that would motivate me to continue wanting to kill giant big deer. And I felt like after I did that, I still don't give a shit at all about score and antler size. Like,
let me ask you this. Do you think you would care more if you made a better shot and a cleaner recovery?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Because I know that's how it is for me.
Yeah.
I have deer on my wall that may be smaller, but I'm like, freaking smoked that thing. He ran 30 yards, fell over dead. And you're like super proud of, like, that's how you want it to go, that picture in your mind. And I have like, oh, this deer, it's a bigger scoring deer, but it's like, all right, gut shot him and I had to chase him around for a day and shoot him two more times. And I kind of look at it and my memory of it is a little tainted, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, and even if they're a bigger deer, like, you just look at it differently, I guess.
Yeah.
I can testify to that 100%. I mean, I know what my answer is. I shot that biggest deer of my life, and I gut shot him.
Yeah.
I had to leave him overnight, and the coyotes ate him. I didn't even think I hit him originally.
Yeah.
And then you know, I figured out I did, and I don't like the deer anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not that I don't like it. Like, I mean, that was the deer I was
hunting.
You're
not as proud of the
accomplishment,
right?
I'm just not. Like, I've spent the money to get him mounted because out of like a respect thing, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it was disrespectful to the animal, you know, the way it all went down, and now I'm not going to get him mounted, and that's kind of disrespectful, in a way. I was just going to skull mount him, and then I was just like, and it did. It if I would have made a clean shot, I'd say it'd be telling you about this giant deer I killed, how happy I was, and I just
That's a good point, because I feel like if I would have slammed it, double lunged him, heart shot him, whatever, and he dropped in 100 yards or whatever, and I was able to recover him that night and enjoy his meat, I would have celebrated differently. Like, I still celebrate that animal, but I don't know, like, and you could be right, Justin, maybe it's because of that, but at the same time, like, I even feel that inches is now in play more within the hunting community than it ever has been. I still find myself falling away from it and just like hating the fact that we score these animals almost.
I think,
but at the same time, like, I'm intrigued by giant bucks, right?
Sure, we all are. But I think that, you know, I think the opposite almost, that people don't care as much about the inches anymore. I mean, I see it just in the way people respond to some of our videos. Like, for them, I think they enjoy a good story, a fun experience, something that's relatable, a person that they can relate to, maybe that's entertaining. Like, as far as what we do, like, I feel like if you had a good personality, a badass, cool hunt for a 130-inch deer that was just well-filmed and enjoyable and well-produced, like, people would enjoy that more than, like, let's face it, no offense to, like, the Drurys and Lacassias. Those guys have done a wonderful job. But how many more 180s can I watch get killed in a food plot from a box blind? No offense, Fawcett, because he does a lot of that, right? But, I mean, it's lost its luster to a certain degree, right? I mean, I've seen 200 Boone and Crockett deer get slammed out of a freaking blind during the late season in a food plot nowadays. Right. I think people are just kind of, like, they're losing their interest in it a little bit, and they're looking for other things that maybe they can relate to a little bit more that they haven't seen as much. This is part of the reason guys like the hunting public are doing so well, because it's like this is a new thing that people haven't really done, and it's a little bit more relatable to the average guy, and they've kind of latched on to that thing, and that has zero to do with inches.
Yeah,
you're right. It's always a constant battle with Frank and I, right? Because, like, we've been best friends our whole lives, and we've hunted together forever, but he does not care at all. Like, if it's a mature deer, I'm shooting it. Like, I he doesn't care what it is. And to me, I just want to shoot big deer. Like, it's not that it's got to be a 200-inch deer. I just want to hunt the biggest deer that I have. Like, that's what I want. That's my goal. So that's what I try to do. Meanwhile, my other, you know, the other half, Frank, he's exactly the opposite, right? So, like, there's stuff that we're in the tree all the time together.
Which,
you know, as we know, filming with each other is like another marriage, you know. And what I want's not always the same thing that he wants. And there's, you know, we talked about it earlier. You know, he killed a, like, 120-inch deer this year. And it was coming, and I was like, we'd passed up some nice deer that were young. And you know, it was just a three-year-old deer, but it wasn't going to amount to anything, you know, as far as making this huge trophy stuff. And I just told him, I was thinking in my head, I'm like, this is so stupid. We hunt together every day. We work our balls off at this. We're out here together. That's what it's about, having a good time. And we're going to pass up another deer just because we're wanting to kill some giant. And I knew he'd love to shoot it. And I said, Frank, here comes one. Get him if you want. And, man, his eyes just lit up. It was the best hunt we had all year. You know, we just had a blast. It was so much fun because it was just relaxed and kind of like being a kid again, you know, a little bit, just being loose.
Yeah, I like that.
It's funny because the last couple of years prior to this, I was trying to become that, like a Clinton, right? Like I want a passing deer. I want to kill bigger deer, and I've moved on to this whatever next phase of my hunting. And then it was like I'm passing deer that I probably should have been shooting, and then neighbors were killing them and they're getting hit by cars or whatever. And finally I was like, this is dumb. Like, I'm out here spending time, money, you know, away from the kids, work, whatever. Like, I'm just shooting some deer. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm not that guy. I don't have access to that type of land and the equipment, and like you can't be that person if you don't have that opportunity. So I'm trying to make myself into somebody that I'm not. So this year a freaking mid-130s buck came out and I was like, you're dead, let's go. Like, I'm not.
Did you have fun?
Hell yeah.
See?
I loved every minute of it, and honestly it was the biggest buck I had within shooting range all year. So I could have let him go and been like, oh, I'm just gonna wait and I'm only gonna shoot a 150, because there's some bigger deer around. Never saw a bigger deer, never had one in range, and I hunted hard, you know, through November. So I'm glad I shot him.
This is something that I've been really doing a lot of thinking about lately, and that is the West, right? And it's just like, for me, I feel like maybe not the farm that I hunt, because it's a really good farm in a really good neighborhood. I'm always going to live in Iowa, so potentially I'm always going to have access to Iowa. But I keep thinking about more and more of the West, like making sure, like, I'm 38, there's only so many more years, right? Even if I take really good care of myself, let's say there's 20 more years as like a primo 60-year-old, right, that I can get out and start doing the kind of hunts that I did this year, you know, in Colorado, chasing elk in some hardcore terrain. And do you guys see yourself kind of wanting to do more of the Western experience as well now, or just save it for later, or what's your guys' thoughts on that?
I want to go all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I go to Wyoming to Dustin's as much as I can.
Yeah.
Like, we go out there on vacation. I go hunting as much as I can. It'll let me come out. You know, I go out and wire a bunch of stuff for him so that I can keep my access, you know, going out there. But I just love it, right? Like, it's just something about the mountains, something about being up there. It's different, challenging. And I don't have – and the other thing is, you know, it's different, like, with the rack, right? Like, I could go out there and shoot something that's not a giant trophy because it's different, and it's more work. Like, I like the work, right? That's why I try to kill a big deer, because I like the process of all the work.
Right.
And if I go out west, it's a lot of work, and that's what I like. Like, I want to go work at whatever I'm doing.
What do you want? Like, are you looking – like, anything? Antelope, elk, muleys, what?
If I could do a spot and stalk on an antelope, I'd probably go antelope hunting. But other than that, I'm not too – like the whole sitting in the blind on the water hole deal.
Yeah.
It's not enough work. I want to work.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? I want to get up in there and go elk hunting and pack in and hike and go. That's what I want to hunt. I want to hunt. I don't want to
wait.
Well, yeah, I want to go.
Well, I'm not quite there.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not sure that I'll ever be. I mean, I want to do it. I want to go on an elk hunt. And when I go on an elk hunt, I want it to be a backcountry type elk hunt, which is why I'm saving up as many points as I'm going to need to draw that tag eventually to go hunt with Dustin. I don't know. I love going out there, and it's beautiful. It's great. But, I mean, there's just, I don't know, something about chasing whitetails at home that I still, like, that's my burning passion. I mean, Todd Graff and I are going to go out to Wyoming in November. We're actually going to go hunt whitetails out there during the rut because we want to kind of experience something different. I think a lot of the Western whitetail hunting is usually early season, September 1st, alfalfa fields type of thing. We're going to go out during the rut and see if we can rattle and decoy some deer.
Oh, that'll be fun.
You know, you could see a long ways. There's a lot of deer. The rut's pretty intense out there.
Yeah.
So we kind of felt like, man, that'll be something different,
right?
And for us as content creators, like, we wanted to go on an elk hunt together. It's what we were going to do.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, like, it doesn't matter how good our elk hunt trip is. Like, it doesn't get as many views on it. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, whitetails is what makes the hunting industry go round.
Yeah.
So it's like, if we're going to spend the money to go, like, I would love to go elk hunting over a whitetail hunt, right? Because I haven't killed an elk yet.
Right.
But if we're going to do it and make the investment, like, let's do something that people are going to watch, you know, that kind of benefits the business a little more.
So do you think you've backed yourself into a corner then there with, like, man, I'm limiting my experiences because I have to create content for a show?
I mean, yes and no. Like, we were going to think about going on a Colorado elk hunt.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, that hunt that we were going to do isn't the elk hunt that I ultimately want to do. This was, like, staying in a lodge and going out on a UTV every day with the guide. And, like that's just not the experience that I'm looking for when I do go on an elk hunt.
Right.
So I really had no problem just saying, let's not do that and let's go whitetail hunting instead.
Right.
I'm totally cool with that. If it would have been a choice between, like, the true backcountry elk hunt that I want to do, I would have pushed for that a lot harder, but I don't have enough points to draw that tag yet.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to wait till I do, and that'll probably be potentially a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I mean, it's an expensive-ass hunt to go on with an outfitter, you know, and I've done the DIY thing, and, dude, I'm not an elk hunter. Like, I could waste years trying to figure it all out, and I get it, and that is part of the fun, but at the same time, like, I want a pretty good chance of getting one because I may not do it again.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wait till I got enough points and enough money and win the lottery and go on a freaking guided elk hunt is my plan.
If you win the lottery, we'll just buy a ranch. I mean, they're for sale.
Fair enough.
They're out there everywhere.
Great.
You just can't get one on top because it's all BLM ground. You'd have to get one down low, and then the elk hunt's easy.
Yeah.
Easier.
Well, I don't know. I'll have to worry about winning the lottery first.
Scratch.
Then figure out what I'm going to buy.
Yeah. Just lottery first. Okay, cool. Well, we've really done a lot of bullshitting in this 34 minutes and 9 seconds.
Yes, we have. Well, we're pretty good for that.
Yeah. Yep.
I do feel like, though, the backing in the corner thing, I feel like I've backed myself in the corner a little bit on the whitetail hunt.
Really?
Like, it's hard for me to leave it.
Yeah.
Because I've worked so hard at it, right?
Yeah.
And, like we talk about moving out west, you know, and part of the reason that I don't is because of the whitetail hunting, you know, what we've done with it, and it's always been our goal, like the filming and everything, and then we've accomplished that, and we do, you know, we're pretty successful at it most of the time, and then we talk about going out west, but it's just hard to give it all up, right? But that's with anything. It's hard to change and just drop it all and leave.
Yeah.
You know, but
I feel that way to a certain degree when it comes to, like, I got a bunch of my buddies that do a ton of public land stuff now.
Yeah.
Like, my buddy Mike, that's pretty much all he's doing nowadays. And he keeps wanting me to, he's like, you know, I killed a nice buck on public 2 years ago. And Mike's like, dude, let's go. But it's like, I lease this properties, and then we put food plots in, and we run cameras, and we do all this stuff that we feel like we're supposed to do. And I feel like I'm so invested in that I feel like I'm just wasting my money if I don't go hunt there.
Yeah.
And then I go, you know, try to do these other things. And the same comes, like, even with, like, some of these out-of-state hunts. Like, trying to get Todd Graff to agree to go to Wyoming from November 16th through the 20th is when we're going to hunt was, like, literally you thought, like, I was going to kill him. Because the thought of him leaving Illinois during that time to go to another state when it's like, I've got all this money invested in farms and, and everything, and then, like, you're asking me to leave that for 5 days to go hunt somewhere else. And the whole time he's going to be wondering, like, what's going on back home, checking his cellular cameras and everything. Like, it's a crazy world we've built for ourselves.
It is. Yeah, and that's Emily's point all the time with me going out there. She's like, don't you want to go do something different?
Yeah.
You know, because like when I go deer hunting, she's like, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen. You know, don't you want to experience something different? But it's just hard for me to
give up on something you love so much.
Yeah, to give
up on
it.
That's back to our analogy earlier. So hunting private land that you own or lease for a long time is like being married. Right? You're married to this thing. It's the same all the time. Sometimes you want to switch it up a little bit. You can go to public.
Yeah.
Going to public's like being with a new chick. You can go wherever you want, do whatever you want. You're
not married. Or the same chick, but just like three glasses of wine deep.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good analogy,
too. There you go.
Right, because then that brings
out.
But
it's like it's like something new every time. Like the public thing, like, let's face it, dude. All the private stuff we hunt, we run cameras on it all year. We know every damn deer on the place.
Yeah.
Right.
When a deer walks out, you're like, you either know you're going to shoot him or not shoot him the minute you lay eyes on him.
Right.
You go do it public, and it's like, you have no idea. You hear those footsteps coming, and you see rack, and you're like, you have zero clue what that is like. And, like, that newness, that uncertainty is like, it's just a whole different experience.
Right. The technology helps on the deer hunting, right? Like, it helps us kill deer or be more efficient at it. But it also hurts experience, I feel like. Like I just know what's going to happen sometimes. And I try to keep that away from Avery to where, like, he doesn't go check trail cameras with me. He doesn't like doing it. And sometimes that bothers me, but then it's always exciting to him because it's something new all the time, you know? Yeah. He doesn't know. So.
Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you guys taking time to do this. I got to run and go do another one somewhere else. You guys are cool. You guys are cool dudes. You guys are cool dudes.
Thanks, Dan. We think you're a pretty cool dude, too.
Thanks, dude.
Been a pretty good 10 years as a team, right?
Crazy. Where did the last decade go?
Yeah. I mean, life's fast, right? We all learned that this week. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Huge shout out to Justin Czar and Clinton Fawcett for hopping on and chatting with me in the bowhunting.com booth, man. Really appreciate that. Huge shout out to each and every one. I got the hiccups, and I'm not going to edit them out because I've been fighting this dang hiccup thing for about 20 minutes. Huge shout out to you for listening to the podcast. Go to social media, follow Nine Finger Chronicles on Instagram and Facebook. Same with same with Sportsman's Nation, Instagram and Facebook. Please subscribe to the Sportsman's Nation and subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. The Nine Finger Chronicles podcast is a standalone podcast now, or you can download it off of the Sportsman's Nation as well and get all the podcasts that come through the Sportsman's Nation Whitetail feed, or you can just download and subscribe to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast on a solo feed. Other than that, a huge shout out to all the partners of our podcast: Exodus, Ozonics, Wasp, Lone Wolf, Deer Lab, Prime, Ripcord, and lastly Hunter Safety Systems. And it is our friends at Hunter Safety Systems that are reminding us, if you're going to be in a tree stand, please wear your damn safety harness. Have a good rest of your week.